Calling all aspiring investment professionals, get a leg up on the competition. Final registration for the August CFA exam ends on May 14th. Register now to secure your spot. The CFA designation is a gold standard in the investment world, opening doors to high-powered careers and impressive salaries. Head over to cfainstitute.org to register. Don't wait. Take control of your finance career today.
Hello and welcome to Guiding Assets, the flagship investment podcast for CFA Institute. I'm Mike Wahlberg, and today we're featuring another interview from CFA Institute's recent Asset and Risk Allocation Summit. In a moment, you'll hear Andres Vinelli in conversation with Ilko Fiole, CFA, about FTX, Terra Luna, the evolution of crypto governance and regulation, and more. Ilko is co-founder and managing partner of Alpha Governance Partners, which is focused on governance for sustainable, global, digital investment management. As an aside, if you ever feel like giving yourself an inferiority complex, have a look at Ilko's LinkedIn profile. He boasts a PhD in economics, plus no fewer than 6 master's degrees in at least 3 languages. So candidly, I'm kind of glad we had the big guns out on this one with CFA Institute's chief economist, Andres Vinelli, returning to conduct the interview on-site in Washington back in early May. Enjoy the conversation.
Hello, Ilko. Thank you for being with us today. Your specialty is corporate governance, advising both investors and companies on how to do better. Let me start by asking about crypto failures in the last year or so. FTX, Terra Luna, yeah. What, if anything, could have been done better in the governance realm to avoid those crises?
Yeah. Let me start with FTX, because most recent. So I've seen, when I looked at it, I saw 3 big governance lapses in FTX, which are not necessarily crypto related, which is also an interesting thing. The first one is that there was absolutely no fiduciary thinking within the FTX structure. The idea that you work with other people's money and as a result you underlie fiduciary duty, something that in the regular investment field we know very well, is something which was completely lacking. As a result, no controls, no governance, and so on. So the idea that so much money was being processed without any fiduciary thought. The second lapse that I've seen is that there was no formal board until very late into FTX. And as a result, also no controls. And so the executive management just could do whatever they want without any sparring and also without any checks and balances. The third thing at FTX that struck me was that if you look at the structure, I think this was a group of companies of over 130 entities. And so you almost have to ask yourself, what was the intent? Because 130 entities is almost ungovernable, let's say, with such a small group of people. And so what was the intent behind that? Anybody who runs a large organization understands that all those entities need maintenance, they need management, they need administration, there are liabilities in there, and so on and so forth. So these are certainly the 3 biggest lapses there.
The last one sounds like poor corporate governance was a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
Perhaps, right?
Yeah, I've seen a comment that an investor had asked for governance at FTX and that there was some rude comment coming back from FTX about this, that they didn't want to have it. Maybe didn't want to give up control over what was going on. In Terra Luna, the Terra disaster was also interesting. I haven't looked as deep into it as with FTX, but what is striking to me is that Terra ran an algorithmic stablecoin. Now, this sounds complicated, but I will say this. If you run a synthetic exposure, okay, and we know this in the investment field already from people running derivative strategies, complicated hedge funds, synthetic ETFs, all kinds of exposures, then we already have experience in the field with things like liquidity risk, collateral issues, and so on. In these situations. And so if you run a stable coin which is backed by an algorithm, similar to, in my mind, to a synthetic exposure, you need to get this risk oversight, let's say, in place, you know, to understand how this runs if you get into trouble. Now, I would ask the question, did Terra have this kind of capabilities in their management and in their board? My assumption here is that they did not. Now, the answer that, you know, regulation may not have required that, I think that if you are a serious player in this space, i.e. in the blockchain and crypto space, irrespective of the presence of regulation, you should think about yourself. What do you do to project trust to your investors, to your counterparties and users of platforms? And so that governance element, putting this in place, was of course the task of management in the first place, which was lacking. If I would be a regulator of that jurisdiction where this happened, and the same goes for FTX around Bahamas, I would really scratch my head and say, okay, in the absence of regulation, could we have done more? Should we have done more, particularly in this field? So it is, again, this is not necessarily a crypto thing. This is a governance lapse, in my mind. Now, in order to judge the risks in the entities, of course, people who actually exercise governance need to understand what they're looking at. So we're going to maybe speak about risks in this space later on, but we got the well-known risk, liquidity, collateral, what have you, but there are also some crypto-native risks which we need to be aware of.
Interesting. Perhaps a charitable view of what happened is that every sector, perhaps every profession at the beginning, it's chaotic. Yeah. And then it gets ordered through expertise from related fields, yeah. Corporate governance, perhaps self-ordering by the markets, demand by investors that are fiduciaries themselves, or perhaps the government. Now, going towards a long-term perspective, how do you see the industry evolving in these matters?
Yeah. So we see clearly regulation catching up. So in Europe, we just had MiCA being announced, which is a top-down view on regulation, things like disclosure, supervision, and so on. Of course, also here in the US, there's lots of talk, and in many other jurisdictions, Japan is catching up, Singapore is clearly active. So there's a lot of talk about regulation. In my mind, there's a couple of things around these discussions which do not hold in this particular space. So on the one hand, yes, we can learn from corporate governance. We can learn from what I call investment governance, which is the governance of outsourced constructs in the investment space. If you think about fund governance and so on, we can think about governance of commons, which we can apply to blockchain, of course. But we cannot solve, let's say, with simple recipes. And I hear these lines, you know, same risk, same regulation. In my mind, that doesn't do justice to the challenge that we have. So we're going to see more regulation. That regulation may not be a fit for this space, especially if you look at DeFi, decentralized finance, if you look at Web3 developments, which are going to be very difficult to be governed by the thoughts that we have out there now, because they are decentralized literally all over the world, so not even speaking about jurisdictions and legal issues there. But anyway, that is going on. The second thing, I think that investors need to understand much better what they're looking at, what they're investing in, and take their own responsibility as well. And so I've been asked, should I invest in this, yes or no? And I'm a CFA charter holder, and I would say part of the CFA curriculum says you need to have a basis for your investment recommendation. Now, we know that within the crypto and blockchain space, there's no such thing as equity research, or hardly. Risk management looks very, very differently. Research in general is weak. And so we don't necessarily completely understand the behavior of these instruments in portfolios, other than increasingly it's a risk on asset. And so the basis for the investment recommendation is actually very weak. So I think that investors need to educate themselves. And one way of that, you know, one thing that can help investors is governance, is the representation of investors in entities or directly into protocols, let's say, that that ensures that their rights are being respected, let's say. And so governance is increasingly going to be a requirement by investors, in my mind. And the third thing, again, if you are a serious player in this space, this is exactly what you want to project to your investors. What is the reason why you can trust me? So recently I was asked by an entrepreneur saying, I want to launch an exchange, a crypto exchange. What should I focus on? I said, well, faster, cheaper, better than anybody else. That's a difficult one because it's already being done many times. Why don't you try to project trust? Trust me because, right? And he was scratching his head because he doesn't understand necessarily, coming from the traditional trading world, what that means. But I think that those mechanisms, I call them also behavioral mechanisms, are going to be seen much more. And I think that especially in a decentralized world, in crypto and blockchain, this kind of analysis going into governance considerations, i.e. behavioral considerations, I think those are going to be important to be able to invite trust.
And that's an important cultural shift because, as I understand the history of cryptocurrency, the whole idea was to do away with trust.
Yeah.
And hence the paradox, and perhaps the growth of the sector.
Yeah.
Coming back to, well, you know, we can do crypto, we can do DeFi, but we need layers of trust.
Yes.
And that's an interesting lesson, at least to me. So we talked quite a bit about risks and how scary this space is, but it's blooming with opportunities, perhaps,
absolutely,
right? So if you were to advise, and that you do, investors, either institutional or high net worth individuals, where in this panoply of instruments and technologies do you see the most value?
Yeah. So there are, of course, different ways of investing in the space. And they all have an element of gambling, or let's say an element of almost like, you know, if you want to phrase it positively, which I like to do, venture capital kind of notion of things, if you look at it. Different ways of investing in this. Where is the most value? If you run a strategy where you trade currencies, you know, top 5, top 10 currencies on a momentum basis, it's not dissimilar from running a currency fund, a regular currency fund, right? And so that could be something where you trade on volatility and that you can make money on. As I say, there's very little research that underpins those currencies, and so that is a big risk. The most value in the industry, which is almost also a recipe against recession, if you will, is where you invest in the real economy. And so companies that build infrastructure based on blockchain to transfer value, be it payment systems, be it transfer of risk or transfer of other information, because that's what the key proposition of blockchain is, in a trusted way, trusted technology, with increased efficiencies and what have you, that is where value is created. And that is where I would see, and I'm also personally invested myself in these, in these kind of projects, where I see a big upside. And then it becomes, you know, choosing the right project, of course, which requires some analysis and some due diligence, again, FTX. And understanding, you know, where you invest in. But infrastructure for the world at large, right? Because you can apply this in all kinds of processes. That is where I see real value, and that is real economy. That's an IT project, if you will, like any other fintech or IT.
So am I correct in hearing that it's mostly on the back office of organizations rather than the exciting trading NFTs and monkeys, unless you're into a momentum trader, right? Perhaps momentum trader can make markets in these assets. But am I correct in judging that?
I think so. The quick answer is yes. The longer answer is also, and so clearly infrastructure, back office, if you will. Why I say also is that blockchain and crypto allows us to develop whole new business models. One model that I can highlight is what we call, you know, in Web3 we call that, where you have decentralized communities which are powered by tokens that otherwise would not attract capital. Let's say, and now they got a token economy around services, and there's a community that can grow around it. these are new business models that are coming up, let's say, and that is on the front end, if you will. That's new business development. These are new, as I say, new models, new people being invited into these communities that participate, let's say. They could have token value, they could have non-token value in there. And so there's also a lot of opportunity there. Yeah.
Fascinating. So it's Securitization 2.0 in my simplistic mind, but it can solve so many issues out there and give investors opportunities for exposure to all kinds of interesting assets.
Yeah.
Now, one of the objections that we have had concerning many of these technologies is the intensive use of energy.
Yes.
I was wondering if these tokens specifically, do they have the same issue, or are there ways to have more reasonable level of energy consumptions?
Yeah, excellent point. There are different consensus mechanisms on that support transactions over a blockchain. And the most well-known that the best known is proof of work, which we use for Bitcoin and for Bitcoin mining. And that is a very energy intensive process. Now, we have seen last year an open heart operation on Ether when they moved from proof of work to proof of stake. In my mind, it was a fantastic accomplishment. The coins were live, and at the same time, they moved away from proof of work. As a result, 99.99% less energy use. And so anybody who launches any protocol today is moving to, or let's say, they will never implement a proof of work concept anymore. They would go for other consensus mechanisms like proof of stake or others. Proof of stake has been around already for quite some years, in fact, including with Tezos, which was an early developer there. And so I think that the energy use is going to drop in that sense. That's one thing, with protocols growing out. The second thing with energy use is that what do you compare, right? And if we start using infrastructure in blockchain infrastructure in companies, then we may well realize that we will use less energy in order, than traditional structures that we have in place. And so I think there's an argument there. And I think that there's research going on that shows these things. There's some excellent research in Cambridge at the Judge Business School that they publish on this material. And the third thing, which is also very interesting, is that if I speak to my friends in the industry, they are very well aware that ESG and these kind of considerations play a huge role. Now, if you think about the impact of carbon tax, if your protocol would be taxed for carbon, for the use of carbon, then all of a sudden the cost structure of using a protocol would go sky high. And so those people who are developing those layer one and layer two and other protocols, they know very well that this is coming. And they know that the success of a protocol lies in the adoption. And so if the adoption is low because carbon tax is being implemented because you have a technology which eats too much energy, then nobody is benefiting from that. So I think overall this is a well-known issue. I think we've seen some, as we call in the blockchain, some FUD, FUD, noise around this thing, but I think this is going into the right direction.
Sounds to me like this is a problem that is the marketplace is well positioned to address.
Yes.
And it's very interesting how traditional and blockchain are merging in many ways. Take the issue of Silicon Valley Bank. We talked about trust as an issue in the crypto world, but it's also very issue in the old-fashioned world of banks and
Absolutely.
Banks. Ron, do you have any views on what happened in that instance?
So it's been a bit, what happened there was a bit, I mean, further away from me. I've seen, of course, the reports on the interest rate mismatch, the absence of proper risk management. I think that, from a governance perspective, that's also something that should be looked at, and I'm certain people are looking into that. So I'm not knowledgeable about the case per se, but I think the question of how do I project institutional trust to my stakeholders is something that needs a lot more analysis, and not just saying, okay, we have a few people on the board, they got great resumes. That's not enough. We need to be transparent. And I think not only do we need to be transparent, I think we're living in a time of radical transparency, and increasingly so, with all the technologies that we know. And so we need to use those technologies to project trust to investors, to counterparties, clients, and so on. And if I would be in the board of a bank, which I'm not at the moment, then I would certainly think, okay, what can we do in terms of taking measures to prove that people can trust us, and not just make assumptions there. That will be, in my mind, a competitive edge of one bank over another.
Are you thinking about some particular types of disclosures that would provide a better view of the workings of the board or the company, or is it both, yeah, or is it something else?
Yeah. So being also an ethicist, I think that we can start to use a lot more the models that we know from moral philosophy, from ethics, that help us make decisions, which on the one hand lower ethical risks, on the one, and on the other hand support living up to our own aspirations. If you ask these boards, they all have fantastic aspirations, and I think we can support that with tools which we know are there, which so far have not been used. Now, once you do this, you can actually communicate to your stakeholders and say, you know, we have these uncertainties. This has been the thought process. We've been speaking to all the stakeholders. We took it all in, and this is now the decision that we're making. Instead of keeping it secret, if you will, and then once a year you come out with an annual report, or some reports in the interim, let's say. So disclosure has their own problems, right? Data is actually last year's data. People can't read these reports unless you're a CFA chart holder, almost, right? And so disclosures are not cutting it. And I think that we can implement a couple of tools in our day-to-day decision making, in executive and non-executive levels, that can project a lot of trust to investors, almost on an ongoing basis. Without necessarily inviting legal liability, because we can say, listen, this is sort of what we do. Of course, legal scholars will have to have a view on that as well. But the old way of reporting and disclosing, I think that is has been proven that it's not enough. I mean, even with SVB going down and other banks going, the First Republic not going down, many of the banks are still in the red in terms of market movement over the last 24 hours, i.e. Investors look at this sector and say, I don't necessarily believe that the measures taken are enough, right? And even if it's just psychological, maybe there may be enough capital around, it means that boards of banks and also regulators need to think about other ways of projecting trust than they do now, yeah.
That's amazing. I wouldn't be surprised if industry leaders wouldn't look at you with your intersection of economics, ethics, and deep understanding of the technology. We have so many questions that are vital for financial markets. Yeah. So thank you so much to making time in your busy schedule to share your thoughts with us.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Andres Finelli in conversation with Ilko Fiori, co-founder and managing partner of Alpha Governance Partners. I'm Mike Wahlberg, and this has been Guiding Assets.